Okay, members. Commerce Committee will come to order. Wednesday, March 13th, Commerce Committee is now in order. There are some other committees going at the same time, so we're kind of juggling. You should have an agenda in your packet. What we'd like to start with is the liquor omnibus bill, and there's a delete all amendment that you should also have, 541A. And we'll now have Senate Counsel walk through that delete all amendment.
Madam Chairman, members, everybody should have the A2 in front of them. If you recall, several weeks ago, we heard a number of liquor bills. And this this amendment contains those bills Senator Metzen deemed he wanted included in the omnibus liquor bill. I'll just go through them briefly. Section 1 is the Eaton bill.
Madam Chair, before Mr. Stang gets into it, just if you want to note, we do have a quorum.
Oh, thank you. Quorum is present.
Thank you. Section 1 was derived from SF 467, Senator Eaton's bill, which allows a city with a municipal liquor store to issue a brewer taproom license. Section 2 is Senate File 624, Senator Ingebrigtsen, and it allows a micro distillery to provide limited samples of distilled spirits on its premises. Section 3, SF 219, the Senator Dahl bill, allowing the commissioner to issue a malt liquor educator license. Section 4, another Senator Dahl bill, Senate File 220, expands current law relating to wine tastings for nonprofit organizations to also include tastings of malt liquor. Section 5 was the Rosen bill, Senate File 358, which extended a sunset date related to a beer festival in the city of Winnebago. Section 6, we did not actually have the bill in front of us at the committee hearing, but we had the language. It was later introduced, but we did include it in this delete all. It's the Pappas bill, SF 823, which authorizes the city of St. Paul to issue a liquor license to the Lower Town Regional Ballpark. And Section 7, Senator Pratt's bill, SF 114, authorized Shakopee to issue an on-sale license to Valley Fair. So those are the seven sections which are currently drafted into the omnibus liquor bill and reflected in the A2 amendment.
Thank you, Senator Council. We also have some bills that were not included. Is there someone that will move the A2? Senator Dahl moves the A2 amendment. So, Senator Reinhart, if you would like to be included?
What? Let's vote on the A2.
Oh, sorry.
All in favor of the A2.
On the motion to move the A2, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
And I think the appropriate thing to do is lay this SF 541 aside for a moment. And I believe the committee may or may not want to incorporate several of the other liquor bills we have on the agenda into this. So you may want to move to the next bill on the agenda. I think Senator Reinert maybe is ready on.
Okay. We'll lay aside A2 and we'll continue with Senate File 958. Senator Reinhart.
Chair, hopefully this will take about 30 seconds, and I know somebody from the marathon is here, but there's a lot of people here, so come on up. He's here to answer questions, but Madam Chair and Committee, all this bill does is the Twin Cities Marathon changed its name to Twin Cities in Motion, so we need to amend the language, striking Twin Cities Marathon and inserting Twin Cities in Motion, and we remedy that in the future by including language that says, or its successor organization. Happy to answer any questions. As is my test fire.
Thank you, Senator Reinert. Any questions or discussion from the members of the committee? Seeing none, what would you like to
Madam Chair, I'd ask you to lay the bill over for possible inclusion in the omnibus liquor bill.
You could actually make a motion now to include it in the omnibus liquor bill.
You could make a motion to include it in the omnibus bill.
Right, Madam Chair, I would move to include it in the omnibus liquor bill.
On that motion? All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Motion prevails.
Senator's position.
Next, Senator Dibble. Is he here?
He's still in the room.
Not here.
Ask if someone could.
Pappas is across the hall, I think.
Senate File 860, Pappas. Is there someone that can speak to the Senate File 860?
Yes.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
And Madam Chair, do we need to, I can move 8604, Senator Pappas.
So moved.
Excuse me?
State.
Madam Chair. Senator Pappas has a delete everything amendment to her bill. Get it out. Do we have a co-author on the bill here?
Ask that.
We need a co-author at least here.
Is there a co-author on the bill here?
No.
No.
We really should have a co-author on the bill before we take it up.
We need
an author, a co-author at least.
Let's get back to.
So you have to withdraw his motion and then take the amendment first.
Sorry, Senator Reiner, we need a co-author here on the bill. So if you'd like to withdraw your motion to take up the bill,
we can hand this out for discussion purposes. Talk about it, but not take any action on it.
Okay, what we're going to do is we're going to hand out the A4 amendment and take a look at it and provide the members of the committee discussion.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I could at least describe the A4 amendment quickly before we get into the testimony.
Okay, Senate Counsel.
The A4 amendment is a result of some negotiations associated with Senator Pappas, the Senate file. And there's a fair amount of language here, but really essentially all it does, current law allows defined small brewers to sell off sale from their brewery if they produce up to 3,500 barrels of malt liquor. Basically, what this amendment does is raise that from 3,500 to 20,000 barrels, so it expands the range of small brewers that are allowed to off sale from their premises. And the second major part of the amendment is on page 4. This is a provision which allows brewers to self-distribute their product in certain limited circumstances, and current law allows self-distribution if you sell under 25,000 barrels, and this amendment would essentially reduce that to 20,000. So those are the two main elements of the A4 amendment, and as I indicated, this was a result of negotiations from interested parties.
Okay, testifiers, if you want to state your name and talk to the amendment. Whichever.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Joe Bagnoli. I represent the Minnesota Licensed Beverage Association, the Minnesota Municipal Beverage Association, retailers of alcohol in the state of Minnesota. This is an amendment that I apologize, I didn't quite catch how Council Stang presented it, but this is an amendment that myself, the Minnesota Beer Wholesalers, and Minnesota Brewers Association, the small brewers in the state of Minnesota, have worked out, and we believe we've reached a compromise that works for everyone's interest at this time. So it is, as Mr. Stang, I heard him present the facts of it, and that is how we understand the facts. And we, on behalf of my organizations, we support the amendment. I know the beer wholesalers, and I'm not sure if do as well. Mr. Sheehan, Colin Sheehan, who represents the beer wholesalers, has been involved and supports it as well.
Okay, thank you. Members, do you have any questions or discussion on his testimony? Yes, go ahead.
I had one thing I'd just like to say to the amendment. There's at least a, and this is a little bit for legislative intent. Kind of waiting for Mr. Stang to. First, actually, I'd like to compliment Mr. Stang on his hard work on this. This wasn't an easy drafting thing, drafting amendment, and there was a variety of us that were peppering him, and so I just wanted to thank publicly Mr. Stang for all of his help in drafting this. I think it's a clean and well-worded amendment. But in terms of legislative intent, there was a small change to the way the language used to read. The language used to read, the beer had to be manufactured and packaged on the premise of the brewery. The change was made so that the beer has to be manufactured and packaged by the brewery at its licensed facility. And in some cases, for small brewers, they have a small brewery, but they've contract brewed with another brewery where they may have a different line of bottles coming in, and they wanted to be able to pour growlers of beer that they might not necessarily be brewing that day at that brewery. Our concern and the way we believe that and this is the part of the legislative intent I wanted to express, is that the language now says they can do that situation. However, they have to pour the beer at a place that is a brewery that they own. If they contract some beer elsewhere and bring it in, they have to bring it to a place where they are brewing beer. I think that's consistent with how beer Minnesota Brewers Association understand the language as well, and I just wanted to state it so that it was clear for future record.
Thank you. Senator Reiner.
Thank you, Chair Jensen. Mr. Bagnoli, as I listen to your comments, it sounds to me like you're just trying to make sure that the three-tier system stays in place and we honor the integrity and purpose of the three-tier system.
Madam Chair, Senator Reinerts, that is accurate.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Next testifier, go ahead and state your name for the record.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Dan Larson, and I work with the Minnesota Brewers Association. This is a brand new organization. We're 5 months old, and it's indicative of the energy that you see in the craft brew industry right now. When we came to you a couple of years ago as a group that wanted to that was seeking to sell pints of beer at the brewery, and we told you that this is an initiative that's going to help an industry, that's going to continue to help us grow. And if we could just have the government, in effect, move out of the way and working with our partners, the wholesalers and the retailers, we could continue to add jobs, build economic security, and buy locally. And all of that has we're here to report today that all of that has been accomplished. I think in 2 years ago when we were here, there were 6 craft breweries in the state. Today there are 26 and growing. So it's a good story. This is a good amendment, and we hope you will support it. The agreement, our group is in full support. I brought with me today is Ryan Petz, and he's a co-founder of a great example of what the craft brewery is here in the state of Minnesota. And I think that concludes my testimony. Unless there's any questions, I'd like to turn it over to somebody who's actually doing this kind of work and actually in this exciting business.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Larson. Any questions by the members? Discussion? Okay. Next testifier. Go ahead.
Madam Chairman and committee members, my name is Ryan Petz. As Dan said, I am the president of Fulton Brewing. We're a new brewery that started about 3.5 years ago, as well as the president of the Minnesota Brewers Association. We're very excited for this bill and to have reached an agreement with the wholesalers and the retailers associations. We think it's something that can benefit our entire industry throughout the state, as it helps small brewers such as my company and those represented by our organization grow and distribute more beer through the three-tier system in Minnesota. So we're very happy to be included in this, and we We thank you for your support. As Dan said, my company, Fulton Brewery, and other breweries like it have really exploded in the last few years. There were just six a few years ago. We think we're adding to Minnesota's economy through increased hiring. My company a year ago only had 2 full-time employees, and today we have 14 and 9 part-time employees. So this bill really helps us out and helps us continue to grow and add jobs. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you for your testimony. We are in we're in recess. We need to go to the Senate floor.
Be back.
Audience and Senator Dibble and others, is the omnibus liquor bill, and we've got 3 that we're hearing from this afternoon with the possible adding them on to the liquor bill, and Senator Dibble is here. Then we have Senator Pappas after, but she's presenting the bill next door. So, Senator Dibble, let's hear about your sake brew pub off-sale liquor license clarification. Is that Senator Dibble, welcome to the committee.
Thanks, Mr. Chair and members. This is Senate File 1094, I believe. And, Mr. Chair and members, this is kind of a unique circumstance, a unique situation. We have a restaurant in Minneapolis in my district. It's called Moto I. And they're similar to a brew pub, except that the product that they brew on premise is sake, not beer. In the early days when they were first being established, sake is kind of a unique creature. Is it beer? Is it wine? Is it spirits? It's most similar to beer. And that's been the determination, and that's how it's recognized in federal laws. But it's a malted beverage similar to beer, and so we were able to clarify that and let them open up as a brew pub. And at that time, they were able then to obtain their off-sale license, similar to what brew pubs are now allowed to do, is sell their growlers, let folks take the product off-premise. They opted not to do that at the time, and they went to renew, and suddenly they started being construed as wine, and then that caused them to run into all kinds of other sorts of problems and situations. So rather than try to extract all of those problems, we worked with counsel who helped us devise this solution for this narrow circumstance. Frankly, there aren't any other sake brew pubs in the entire country, and so we simply seek to establish a special law that allows sake brew pubs in Minneapolis for the purpose of off-sale to do that in a similar manner as we allow any other brew pub.
Okay, sir, did you wish to make a couple of comments? I think we're headed in the right direction, so is there any opposition to this bill? Okay, did you want to say a few words? Okay, I think we're going pretty well here, but Senator Dahl moves that Senate File 1094 be passed and added to the omnibus liquor bill. Yeah. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Members.
Pappas or no? Further discussion on the. We're trying to round up. Rein this liquor bill in right now if we can, but we're waiting for Senator Pappas. Did we hear, I know some witnesses were at the front desk there testifying. Is there anything else to be said? All right, I think that we'll set it aside for the time being. Senator Dahl, why don't you do this? Send a guy up.
Members, we're going to be taking a look at Senator Metzen's Senate File 1131. And so it's on the top of our agenda there.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Senator Metzen.
Thank
think, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think we want to take out the word criminalization out of the title and out of the bill so we can avoid, I think it's self-explanatory, and without that in there. So I would, counsel, do you have that? It's a one word.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, members. On line, page one, line six, delete criminalize or, and then
in
the, the title on line 1.2, as the chairman mentioned, delete criminalization and.
Yeah. I would move that amendment.
Senator Metzen moves to amend Senate File 1131 with the A1 amendment. Any questions? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion prevails.
Now Senator Metzen. Mr. Chairman, this bill has come to me from the Minnesota Petroleum Marketers. Talks about no local government may restrict the sale of motor fuel based upon the method of purchase agreed to by the seller and purchaser. I think there's one municipality, I believe, only Coon Rapids, makes you abide by coming in and or not coming in using the credit card outside. I think they're going to even eliminate that mandate next week, I believe. But why don't we have Mr. Toma from the Petroleum Marketers and Rick Dean kind of visit with the committee for a minute or two and to tell you why the need for this.
Mr. Toma, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Kevin Toma, and I work for the members of the Minnesota Petroleum Marketer Association. We're here today in support of Senate File 1131, and thank Senator Metzen for bringing this to you today. I have with me Mr. Rick Dean from Dean Oil Company, who operates a store in Coon Rapids, Minnesota, and he wants to share his retail experience with you after a prepaid ordinance was instituted by city ordinance. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Toma. And please introduce yourself for the committee.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Rick Dean. I'm with Dean Oil Company. We're a fourth-generation small business with approximately 35 employees. We are distributors of heating oil, gasoline, and diesel fuel, and we also own and operate two convenience stores, one being a Marathon-branded gas station that's located within the city limits of Coon Rapids. Prior to the prepay ordinance taking effect, 2012 was shaping up to be a pretty solid year for our Coon Rapids store. For the time period of January 2012 through July 2012, our inside sales were up roughly 6%. Gasoline sales were up 0.5% versus the same time period the previous year. Those sales figures may not sound like much, but considering the high gas prices we were experiencing at the time, we were pretty satisfied with those results. That changed dramatically in August of 2012 once the prepay ordinance became effective. We started feeling the financial impact immediately. Inside sales and gasoline sales started decreasing in August, while the public complained and adjusted to the new law. Customers would come in the store and berate our cashiers, asking why we felt like they were criminals and why we treated them such. Customers who use coupons especially experienced difficulties, as they would have to come into the store, guess how much gas they were going to pump and put into their car, go out, pump the gas, and then many times have to return to the store the second time for a refund because they had overestimated their needs. These transactions typically ended with, "I'm never buying another gallon of gasoline in Coon Rapids again." Once proven how cumbersome the process has become, we continue to experience double-digit declines in gasoline sales in September and October. And the situation has progressively gotten worse. Since November, we've seen decreases in gasoline sales by as much as 35% versus the same period the previous year. Inside sales numbers are also down significantly, as much as 10% versus the same period last year. And that's not factoring in the fact that we were up 6% prior to the ordinance taking effect. We have been forced to make some dramatic changes at our store. I have cut 32 payroll hours per month at our location. We've had to reduce starting wages for new employees. And now I'm forced to consider raising the prices of my products and goods I sell to try to compensate for the negative cash flow position this ordinance has placed my business in. So far, measures have not come close to stemming the tide. I feared this ordinance would have a negative impact on our business before it was passed. Our total drive off for the year 2011 at our one location was a little less than $1,000 we had lost in drive offs. Our total losses through 7 months of living with this prepay ordinance have exceeded $20,000. So at this time, I would like to thank you, Mr. Chairman, and the committee for letting me speak. And if you had any questions for me, I would do the best I could to answer those. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dean. Any questions for the testifiers or Senator Metzen?
Mr. Chairman, members, I mean, if you own a gas station, you can still say you have to prepay. We're just not saying that the city can mandate that you have to do it. So you have your prerogative, so that's what we're trying to do here.
Were there anybody else in the audience that wanted to testify on this bill?
You want to say something?
We do have someone, League of Cities, I believe. Welcome to the committee, and if I could have you introduce yourself and some brief comments are in order.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Patrick Hines. I'm with the League of Minnesota Cities. As Senator Metzen noted, I believe there is only one city that passed this ordinance, Coon Rapids. The reason they passed the ordinance is because they were experiencing a large number of police calls related to people driving off without paying their gas. And these police calls were limited to a few stations, and they were creating a burden on the police department and costing the city a great deal of money. And so the city council passed the ordinance in response to that, trying to alleviate a problem that was becoming expensive for the city. The city has this power to adopt the ordinance under its general welfare power in Chapter 412 of Minnesota statute. It specifically gives cities the power to regulate trade and commerce. And generally, the League of Minnesota Cities does not think that the legislature should restrict those powers of a city to adopt ordinances for the general welfare. Obviously, there are costs of not having that ordinance. There are costs to the owners of having the ordinance in place, but we think the city council is the best forum to discuss the pros and cons of those ordinances. Thank you. I'll stand for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Hines. Are any questions from the members? Okay. Any other testifiers or questions regarding the bill? If not, do you want to renew your motion?
I'll move that Senate File 1131 as amended be recommended to pass.
And this be referred to state and local government. On that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Senator Jensen. Senator Jensen, we're going to move down to Senate File 1088. Senator Jensen, whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Senate File 1088 has two main objectives, and both are an attempt to make it easier to get insurance documents from the insurer to the customer. The first objective is that the legislation would modernize Minnesota insurance law by authorizing insurance carriers to provide customers with convenient translations of documentation, such as policies, endorsements, and languages other than English. Non-English documents are intended for convenience to the customer only, and this legislation does not require insurers to provide documents in a foreign language under any circumstance. It is 100% optional for insurance carriers to do this as a convenience to their customers. Buying insurance is one of the most important financial decisions an individual or family can make, and providing this information to consumers in their primary language is a service that would help customers fully understand their benefits. And very importantly, the legislation provides that the English language version, and this is an important part of the bill, the document is primary and that the English version is the one that's primary and controls any and all dispute resolutions. This preserves contract interpretation laws that have been established by the courts and the legislature and the Department of Insurance. Now, the second objective is that we're trying to update the language in the law to allow insurance notices and documents to be delivered to the consumers through electronic means instead of the current standard certificate of first-class mail. Today, if an insurance customer wants to receive certain documents and notices, in most cases, they would not be able to, the carriers would not be able to honor that request. But what we would like to do is to allow them to receive their documents and notices in a more modern means. This legislation is designed to accommodate customer choice and the evolution of how information is provided to people. Consumers would increasingly, and we know this in all a lot of situations, to have their documents electronically provided, easily accessible, rather than having paper documents filed away and sometimes difficult to locate. With that, that's an explanation of what the bill is attempting to do. I do have with me.
Welcome to the committee, Mr.
Johnson.
And please proceed.
Mr. Chairman and committee members, Bob Johnson, Insurance Federation of Minnesota. I'll be very brief, Mr. Chairman, and depending on if committee members have questions, Senator Jensen explained the bill. There are the two primary parts. We've reviewed the legislation with the Commerce Department, and Mr. Brickwitty's here. I believe they don't have any objections to the legislation. And as Senator Jensen said, we're trying to modernize really the insurance business in terms of the customers, and there's growing populations that would like these policies written in foreign languages. So current state law doesn't permit that, so we actually need that's sections 1 and 3. So we need to change state law to authorize that. And then section 2 of the bill, as Senator Jensen outlined, provides this additional option if the consumers want to receive some of the notices and information electronically. If they don't, then we keep the current systems as is. So we're not changing any of the substantive standards, any of the notice provisions, any of the time frames. It's simply adding that electronic option for those consumers, which is, we all know that there's a growing group of consumers that don't want paper and they want their information and documents electronically, so we'd like to be able to accommodate them. So, Mr. Chairman and committee members, that's what Senate File 1088 does before you today.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Any questions for Mr. Johnson or Senator Jensen? Senator Goodwin.
Just a real quick one, Mr. Johnson. How much is this going to lower rates by?
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Goodwin, I think this one is truly just we're going to keep all the same paper that's there, probably less paper, and there might be I guess I can't give you an answer, Senator Goodwin.
No, that's okay.
We'll keep track of that if we can and let you know.
Please.
Were there any other questions or any other testifiers regarding Senate File 1088? Go ahead and, Senator Jensen, you move your bill.
Yes, I would like to move Senate File 1088 and recommend it to pass.
I believe it goes right to the floor.
Is that right? And refer to the floor.
I think so. All right. Any other discussion on that motion? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee.
Are we doing pass? I think we'll, Senator Pappas, I believe we wanted to return to the Senate File 860, which is the brewer off-sale intoxicating license for growlers authorization. We've heard testimony already, but if you wanted to make any other comments. comments or if we have any questions for the author, this would be the time.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I just really want to thank all the stakeholders that worked so hard on this, Minnesota Beer Wholesalers Association, the Minnesota Licensed Beverage Association, and the newly created Minnesota Brewers Association. I don't know if they showed you at all that they actually have their own magazine called The Growler, which is really fun. So I think this is going to, you know, the fun things about these craft breweries is it's a really exciting growing industry. I mean, there were 6 craft breweries in the state just a short time ago, and now there are at least 26, and that number is growing. So we will see more and more of these craft beers, and I think this compromise amendment really will go a long way toward helping promote the industry. So, Mr. Chairman, I would just move then the A4 amendment, delete all amendment, to Senate File 860.
Mr. Chair, before we vote.
Senator Reiner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Pappas, could you hold that magazine up again?
This is Duluth.
Yeah, thank you.
There must be some mistake.
The new craft brewing hotbed of
Minnesota.
Superior
beer.
So the motion was to adopt the A4 amendment. All in favor of that motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
And then I believe I move that the Senate File 860 be incorporated into the omnibus liquor bill, Senate File 541.
That's correct. Senator Pappas has moved Senate File 860 be moved to be incorporated into the liquor omnibus bill. On that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you. Shortest time I've ever had.
We have to move on the liquor bill yet? Oh, yeah. Okay. We have to wait on the entire liquor bill until the author gets here. But Senator Sparks, I believe I saw. Right there. Thank you. Have a seat to your the Commerce Committee, which you're a former member of.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. It's nice to be back with the Commerce Committee. Today in front of you we have Senate File 748, Mr. Chair. And if someone on the committee would be so kind, I know the Department of Commerce has been working closely, and due to the fact that the floor session took some of your time, if someone would be so kind as to delete Section 1 of the bill to get the bill in the shape the author would like, that would be very helpful.
Senator Pappas has made a motion to remove Section 1 of the bill. On that motion, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. Senator Sparks.
Mr. Chair, I'd just like to turn it over to the two witnesses in the essence of time. Mr. Train, I think, will start the testimony.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chairman and members, my name is Peter Thrain. I'm with Leonard Street and Dinard, and we represent a coalition of specialty life insurers that sell pre-need and final expense life insurance. With me today is Mr. Jerry Krause, who's vice president of the Homesteaders Life Insurance Company, which is a large provider of this product. I'll be very brief. We have worked carefully with the Department of Commerce. They are not opposing this bill. We're not aware of any opposition, and it is supported by the funeral providers in the state of Minnesota. This bill deals with funeral life insurance, pre-need and final expense insurance. That's a specialized life insurance product that's essentially used to prepay funerals. It's sold by funeral directors at the time of the planning of funeral. It provides a fully regulated product. The solvency of the provider is regulated. The terms of the contract are regulated. And as a result, it provides a very financially secure alternative to other forms of pre-planning and funding of funerals. There is a problem under Minnesota law with the provision of this product. Minnesota law's regulation of graded death benefits is broad enough that it covers this product, and the effect of that is that it essentially limits the sale of the product on a single premium basis. That works a hardship on those that are unhealthy and that can't pay for the entire premium up front. And as a result, this legislation, now Sections 2 and 3, exempt final expense and funeral insurance from the graded death benefit requirements of Minnesota law. You know, better, I think, and probably said it better than I did, is Mr. McGreevy, of the Washburn-McGreevy Funeral Chapels, who says, and I think you should have these letter in your packet, who says, as someone who has watched families fall through the cracks in our current legislative situation, I strongly urge passage of this legislation. It will allow funeral consumers in poor health to go ahead and prearrange and pay for their funeral plans in a way that is comfortable for them and allows them to protect their families with a greater insurance product. Again, we're not aware of any opposition. We've worked with the funeral providers. We've worked with the Department of Commerce, and we'd appreciate your support of this bill, and we'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Thrain. And Mr. Krause, go ahead and introduce yourself.
I don't have any additional testimony, Mr. Chairman or members of the committee, but if you have questions, I'll be happy to answer them.
All right. Any questions for the testifiers or Senator Sparks, members? Anybody else in the audience wishing to speak on this bill? If not, Senator Goodwin, would you want to move the bill?
Aye. So moved.
As amended.
As amended.
Senator Goodwin moves Senate File 748 as amended be recommended to pass and go to the floor. Any questions on that motion? All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Nay. Motion prevails. Thank you,
Senator. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members.
Senator Dahl, Senate File 586.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. And this is a bill that was just laid over. We had a pretty extensive debate on this bill, if you recall, members, on I think it was the 6th of March. And if I can just refresh your memory a little bit. In short, this bill makes it clear that if an attorney is directly or indirectly in the debt settlement business, they are covered by Minnesota laws. If an attorney is not affiliated with a debt settlement business, they are exempt from the laws. It also states that contracts must be written and disclosures must be given in that primary language which the contract was negotiated, even if the debt settler does not advertise that language. And then the bill extends the FTC's advance fee ban to all debt settlement transactions. So the reason this bill is necessary to ensure that all out-of-state attorneys whose primary business is debt settlement comply with Minnesota's law. And this bill is not too tight to prevent general practitioners from helping clients, but it is sufficiently clear to include those who are in the debt settlement business. In short, we just want to make sure that all the attorneys that are in debt settlement are playing by Minnesota rules. Hopefully you recall the discussion, and I urge your support.
Is there any questions? I think you've had some discussion, Senator Dames.
Madam Chair, Senator Dahl, when we heard this bill last week or a week and a half ago, Senator Latz had expressed some concerns, and so as I understand, the groups are going to get together and try to iron this out. Has that been done, and what's the results of that?
Senator Dahl.
Madam Chair, and I do know that Ron Elwood has talked to some of the persons that you have mentioned, and I know that Senator Latz did some more checking. I do not know if there was resolution, but if Senator Latz wants to make any comments, he's welcome to.
Senator Latz.
Madam Chair and members, I did have an amendment I was considering in this matter, and I've done a fair amount of investigation on my own and talked with a number of people about it. And at this point, I do not intend to offer the amendment. I'm satisfied that the bill in its current form, from my standpoint, is appropriate.
Well, thank you, Senator Latz. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, is there any other questions? Then Senator Dahl would recommend that Senate File 586 be recommended to pass.
And all those in favor, as amended.
As amended. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senator Dahl. Okay.
Next, we have Senator Pappas with Senate File 935. When you're ready, Senator Pappas.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman and members. I'm going to start in the 1870s, but not give you too long a history. But in the 1870s, the legislature enacted a gross earnings tax on fire insurance policies and devoted the revenue to pay the cost of fire departments. Subsequently, fire aid was dedicated to firefighter pensions. Then, 100 years later, in 1971, the legislature imposed a gross earnings tax on auto insurance premiums and devoted those revenues to aid for police pensions, mainly because of the requirement that no insurance claim can be made without a police accident being filed with the state. So that was the nexus. Additionally, unfortunately, police state aid has fallen from a high of $72 million in 2004 to now $60 million collected in 2012. Similarly, fire state aid has fallen from a high of $32 million in 2006 to $21 million in 2012. So this $23 million reduction, combined with investment challenges, property tax pressures, the loss of local government aids, has caused a lot of pressure on the PERA fund and the Volunteer Fire Relief Associations. So why we're here today is that the police and fire groups are seeking a surcharge on the 3.1 million auto policies of $5 annually per auto policy, and a similar surcharge of just $5 annually on the 1.5 million homeowners' fire coverage, to provide direct state support to all the police and fire, career and volunteer pension funds, to provide for the continued integrity of the funds and help protect against future variability. So if you look at the chart in your packet, it has a green cover. You can see how the funds are going to be. I assume that you all have this?
No.
Nope. Yes? Mr. Chairman?
Yep. Senator Pappas,
you
I don't
should
believe
have.
We
These
had
were passed
it.
Out. They were not passed out.
Oh. We're
all right,
get
they're
them
coming.
Passed out.
Great. What this, you know, if you go a few pages into the packet, you will see how it's being divided, how it's being dispersed, the $23 million. We'll start with auto insurance. There are 3.1 million policies, and at a $5 surcharge raises $15.5 million. Two-thirds of the funds, a little over $10 million, are going into PERA, P-E-R-A, which is Public Employee Retirement Association, police and fire for aid, and another $1 million is going into MSRS, which is the Minnesota State Retirement System State Patrol. And then a third of that will go to employers. So all the, you know, the counties and the cities that employ the police and fire will get kind of their share to help them keep down their property taxes and help pay the employer part. Then the homeowners fire insurance, which is 1.5 million policies at $5 surcharge, raises $7.5 million. And about a quarter of that is going into again, the PERA fire, and about 75% will go to volunteer fire relief. So that will help our fire relief associations all over the state. So that's kind of a simpler way of showing you the distinction rather than walking through the bill. And I have with me Mr. Flaherty that's going to testify on this bill, and Mr. Rice and
Chief Esbenson.
Chief Esbenson.
Officer Flaherty, please proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Dennis Flaherty, Minnesota Police and Peace Officers Association, and I'm here in support of this bill. You're going to hear that this is going to provide a much-needed boost to and a help to the cities and counties who I believe have given you a letter of support. I think he said he was leaving it in your packet. Of course, all full-time police officers in the state and full-time firefighters and volunteers as well. And as Senator Pappas indicated, the police aid and state aid has been dropping significantly over the last number of years for a wide range of reasons. And, you know, some of them for at least on the automobile insurance, the actual cost, the premiums for automobile coverage has gone down fairly substantial, believe it or not. Of course, we have a much higher number of motorists driving in our state without insurance. And I've been told that that number could be as high as like one out of every six motorists are operating vehicles in our state without any form of insurance. There is a separate bill that is traveling through the legislature, has passed out, I think, unanimously out of the Pension Commission, which addresses a deficiency that was discovered in the police fire fund. But it should be noted that the 80% of the costs to resolve that are being borne by the members and by the employers and by the retirees. So we've come forward with a fix to resolve that. But we strongly need this assistance to help us in an effort to, if had it not been for this spiraling downturn of police and fire aid, we may not have needed to be here. But we feel this is the best solution available to us. And I'd like to turn it over to Brian Rice.
Mr. Rice, please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chairman, Brian Rice, representing the Police Officers Federation of Minneapolis, Minnesota Professional Firefighters, and the Minnesota Fire Chiefs Association. Just to reiterate a couple points, these two aid programs have been longstanding and basically are the financial pillars of providing for police and fire pensions in the state, not only paid police and fire, but also the volunteer departments. And as Mr. Flaherty said, there's another bill moving through the legislature that was approved that it's going to cut the pensions of the police and fire in the state by 5%. It's a benefit reduction bill. The employee groups have agreed to do that. In addition, to stabilize that fund, they've agreed to put in another 1.2% of their salaries, and the cities and counties are going to put in 1.8% to match that contribution. But 80% of that bill, is cost of it, is basically a benefit reduction contribution increase is borne by the employees. What this bill does is really has three pieces. Additional money would go to the PRA Police and Fire Plan covering 11,000 firefighters and police in the state, and the State Highway Patrol Plan with the game wardens and BC agents to ensure that that fund will have its integrity and be solid. There'll be about $5.3 million going to cities and counties to pay the additional cost of the big pension bill fix. That will help stop property tax increases from happening on that front. And perhaps most importantly, about a quarter of the bill, $5.5 million, will go to these over 700 volunteer relief associations throughout the state. Their pensions are predominantly dependent on what this aid has, and Chief Espenson will testify in a minute, but they have seen a 30% reduction in their state aid in the last 8 years, and the consequence of that has been relief associations throughout the state affecting 17,000 volunteer firefighters are seeing a reduction, significant reduction in their pensions. The quick example on that is that in Wilmer last year, on June 30th, there was a bylaw effect that took place on July 1st. 19 of their members left the department on one day because they were seeing a cut in their benefits. And this is a much-needed bill. And again, the nexus is it's simply making up for the lost dollars that have occurred because of the falling revenues in these two accounts, which in the volunteer case has probably been close to 100% of the aid they get, and at one point supported the police and fire pensions by 90%. With that, I think Chief Espenson would like to testify, Mr. Chair.
Chief Espenson, please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Chief George Espenson, Eden Prairie Fire Department, here representing the Minnesota State Chiefs Association and the Minnesota State Fire Department Association. And I'll just like to echo what the other three testifiers have said and just add an exclamation point onto it, talking about the paid on call of volunteer firefighters statewide. If you look at the last page on your packet, there's a colored map here that shows the amount of benefit that is available, kind of averaged by each region for each year of service that a firefighter puts in for their pension. And the issue, as former co-chair of the state governor's task force on recruitment and retention for volunteer firefighters, is most of these firefighters are getting paid little or nothing per hour, per call. It's all about the retirement benefit. If we are unable to recruit and retain our volunteer firefighters, then it's going to be very expensive for our cities to pony up for career firefighters, or in the case of a lot of smaller cities, there aren't going to be any firefighters, because little towns like Tower, Minnesota, or Ely, or some of these places, they can't afford career firefighters, and they can't recruit or retain their volunteers, then there is no fire service. And that's really what it comes down to when you talk about recruitment and retention. There has to be something in it for the firefighters, for what they're risking, the amount of training that they go through. Minnesota ranks 47th in total spending fire service protection in this state, and yet we're 21st in population and we're 12th in land mass. So we're delivering a really great value. We need some assistance here so that we can continue to recruit and retain people that will literally put their lives on their line for little or no money to keep us all safe. That I'll stand for questions.
Mr. Chairman, I did neglect to move the author's amendment, the delete all amendments. So I'd like to move that this time, the 9A.
Senator Pappas, it's been converted to the A6 amendment.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Same language. And Senator Pappas moves the A6 amendment. We'll get them passed out.
Sorry. It's an author's amendment, so we can just...
It's an author's amendment, so we can go ahead and vote on it. All in favor of the amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Same sign. Opposed? Amendment is adopted. Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, I did want to mention that last night the Pension Commission did send a letter to Senator Metzen as chair of the committee saying that they did approve this legislation. And if it survives this committee and other committees, it would be matched up with the omnibus pension bill.
Thank you, Senator.
I have a few questions.
Do you have any more testifiers? Would you like to hold your...
I do not.
You have a question of...
Yeah.
Please testify. Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Pappas, and maybe the people next to you, but I was reading the third paragraph about in 1971... the legislature imposed a gross earnings tax on auto insurance premiums. Is there a statute that you can cite where I can see where that's coming from? I wasn't aware of that.
Mr. Chair, Senator Gazelka, it would be 69.021, I believe, or it's in 297I10. The tax might be imposed under 297I10, and then the formulas for distribution is under 69021.
Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my comments and questions that are coming forth here are not going to be about how do we figure out the police and fire pension funding, but rather that I don't think it should come from this direction. You know, one of my goals in many of the bills we've looked at over the last few years is to find a way to reduce auto and fire insurance premiums for Minnesotans. And if you look at auto insurance, I think you stated that has gone down a little bit, but home insurance has gone way, way up. And so we're trying to keep that as an affordable product in Minnesota. I believe it's up over 250% in the last 10 years. So I don't want to add anything on there. But my first question for the senator is, what's the problem with using the general fund? I mean, why do we have to go this route where we don't really reach everybody in collecting it?
Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, there's two reasons. First of all, there's a lot of pressure in the general fund. You know, we haven't had an increase in tax revenue since, you know, I don't remember when, actually, before 1999, just been reducing taxes. And there's a lot of pressure from a lot of other sources. So to find $23 million in the general fund would be very challenging. Second, there is a tradition of using the of having the police fire aid and the state fire aid come from a source that has a closer nexus. You know, voters often tell us that they are more comfortable actually with dedicated funds. We as legislators tend not to like them, but they like dedicated funds because they like to know what they're getting for what they're paying. And so to say that, you know, you're going to pay this extra $5 a year, that's all it is, on your auto policy to make sure that you're going to have reliable police that are going to come and file your tax report, or you're going to pay this $5 a year on your homeowner's policy to make sure that you've got a fire department that is there and that we're able to recruit firefighters, especially in rural Minnesota, where it's so difficult to do that. It seems like most homeowners and car owners would say that's really a small price to pay to make sure that I've got those kind of services and have those qualified people doing those jobs, those very, very tough jobs, available to help me.
Senator Gazelle.
Mr. Chair, and one comment related to that is I believe there's around 500,000 uninsured motorists, people that are driving without insurance, therefore not going to be paid this. And I think it would be, even though the general fund may be, we're always struggling with how we reach money there, I think there's going to be proposals coming forward that there's going to be more money in there. And that's the only way I see where it really reaches everyone. I mean, 500,000 that we're certainly use the police services or need police services or fire department services, and we're excluding a big group of people that, if we're going to find a solution, I'm really looking for a solution that everyone participates in.
Mr. Grice, do you have a comment?
Senator Carlson, just to that point, and Senator Gazelka, one point I think we failed to mention is fairly comprehensive. But my understanding is 1971, when the gross earnings tax was imposed, there was also a requirement that you cannot collect on insurance policy in this state unless there's first a police report filed with your local jurisdiction. And in many regards, the police officers in this state are doing the investigatory work for the insurance company. If there's an accident over a certain amount or there's bodily injury, you're supposed to call a police officer. The report is supposed to be filed. Criminal charges could be filed, and I know at one point the Highway Patrol spent almost 20% of its time doing auto accident investigations. Just driving over today, I saw a trooper pull two drivers over, and these police departments perform a huge service to the insurance industry by making these reports. And I would grant the question on the general fund issue, but we've worked on pensions for 30 years. These are the pillars of what sustains your police and fire pensions in this state. And we're coming forward with this at a time where police and firefighters are taking a 5% benefit reduction. We know the severity of the problem, but the resources are not there any longer, and we need to try to fix the problem, and it's getting dire for these volunteer relief associations as well. A 30% reduction in their benefits for 17,000 citizens of the state who are willing to put their life on the line every day and respond at any time of the day to take care of the communities we all live in.
Any other questions? Oh. Senator Reinert.
Thank you, Chair Carlson. And Mr. Rice, Mr. Flaherty, Senator Pappas, I've had a chance to visit with you all about this. I have similar concerns, though, for different reasons. But the problematic part about the surcharge for me is that it's inherently regressive. And that's something that fiscally we've been trying to move away from as at least a new legislature. It doesn't change whether you have $1 million home or whether you have a $100,000 home. It doesn't change whether you have a $50,000 car or, like in my case, a $5,000 car. Everyone's going to pay the same fee. Now, Mr. Rice and I had a brief hallway conversation. We think maybe there's a way to crack that nut. I don't have... To me, as it sits right now, the general fund is the place to go because it's the progressive source of revenue, and the surcharge is inherently a regressive source of revenue. If there is a way that we can set a percentage that varies with the value of the policies, I'm much more open to that conversation because it's again, progressive and not regressive. So, as all of you know, and I say this, and I want to be very clear on this point because I'm supportive of the work that our police and firefighters do. I've always had great support from them at home, especially my fire department. So the funding of the pension is a non-issue. To me, it's a no-brainer. It's our obligation that we've set up for many, many years. Where do we get the money from, I think, is the policy work that we as legislators have to do. So I have an amendment that would take it from the general fund instead of the surcharge. And I think it helps keep this bill moving so we can continue the conversation. I sit on taxes, which I think is where it's going next. And if we can figure out that percentage instead of a surcharge, I'm happy to author an amendment there as well. And members, I have an amendment also that Justin, this was done in consultation with Mr. Rice and Mr. Flaherty. And I believe Senator Pappas is aware that this blinks off when we hit 90% funding, actuarial funding on both the police and the fire pensions, or 7 years, whichever comes sooner. And we chatted about this in my office, and I'll let you guys speak to it, but I think 7 years was a number that we felt comfortable with. So,
Senator Pappas.
I won't offer that amendment yet. I want to have some conversation.
And Mr. Pappas. Chairman, if you want to have the amendment passed out, so
it'd
we can look
A5,
at it.
A5 amendment.
We'll pass out the amendment. Senator Reiner will hold on offering it.
And Mr. Chairman, just to comment on that, we had Senator Rosen offered a similar amendment in the Pension Commission. So I think, once the surcharge that is no longer needed and the fund has reached 90% funding, then it seems to me it makes sense that it has a blank off. So I would support the amendment. This is not the right amendment, though.
This is Senator Pappas. This is both parts.
Oh, you have them both together?
Right.
7 years. You could divide it.
And I'm Mr. Chair.
Expense off the general fund appropriation, as you discussed.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not crazy about it. I mean, I agree with the blink off. I'm not real excited about the general fund. I gave my comments earlier. But in the interest of keeping it moving and continue to have discussion about this, I'd leave it to the will of the committee.
Senator Reiner.
Mr. Chair, I would add to Senator Pappas's comments, and just for members of the Commerce Committee as well as our interested friends in uniform, I'm really committed to working with Mr. Flaherty and Mr. Rice on how do we figure this out in a way that is – I'm a big believer in the shortest distance between two points, and I think most folks outside of this building don't object. If they have problems when they don't understand why they're paying and they don't know where it's going. We have a historical context of the policies being a place that we've generated revenue for training for our police and fire, so I don't have an philosophical opposition there. But it's the flat surcharge that troubles me because of its just inherent regressive nature. So it seemed to me like and this is the part I think of this work that people outside the Capitol sometimes are challenged with, it's a five-minute conversation before we walk into a hearing where we sometimes come up with what could be a really great idea. And I was encouraged with a conversation just before committee that I think we might have a way to address this in taxes that addresses the regressive nature but yet keeps it tied here instead of general fund. So I would encourage support of this amendment in commerce, knowing that I intend to work with the author and the supporters as a tax committee member to figure out a progressive way to do this.
Senator Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Pappas, can you tell me the fire policies? You can buy tenants' fire policies also. So I'm assuming that those tenants' fire policies are included in this surcharge. So if we include those in the surcharges, it's not uncommon at all to have tenants in apartment buildings, elderly people, in assisted living, things like that, that are buying these policies. Many cases, these policies are less than $100. So what we're doing is we're putting a 5% surcharge on the people that can least afford it. And, is that kind of your intentions? Is that what's happening?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Dames, that's never
Senator
my
Pappas.
Intentions. People also pay for these issues for fire protection through property taxes. And renters do pay for property taxes through their rent payments. That's why we have the renter's credit to help them with that. So, services need to be paid for. Once again, it's only $5 a year. And now we're actually, with the amendment before us, we are making it a general fund appropriation.
A follow-up.
Senator Davis,
thank you, Mr. Chair. And I do support the amendment. I think that is the way to go in order to get a broader perspective, paying this paying on this pension program so that we get it straightened out. I think we need to do that, but I think we have to do it this way, and I think that's a better way.
Senator Reinert, are you going to move the amendment now?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the reminder. I'll move the A5 amendment, and then I have a follow-up comment.
Senator Reinert moves the A5 amendment. Any other following questions?
Yes.
Senator Latz.
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry.
Sorry, Mr. Chair, if I could just respond to you. Senator Dames raises the point that, thank you, Mr. Chair, that I have concern about, and, you know, we need to find, if it's going to go down this road, it has to be in a progressive way so that someone paying $100 rental policy isn't paying the same $5 charge as somebody who has a much more significant policy.
Thank you, Senator Ryan. Senator Latz.
Mr. Chairman, for every one of us that is trying to is going to have to be dealing with budgets in our respective committees, trying to fund programs that all of us are authoring, that are being heard by our budget committees. You can plan on, in some manner or another, if this amendment taxes, pulling about $23 million out of someone's budget. And I think you're going to have to decide which of the other bills that you've got coming through your budget committees you're not willing to fund if you do this way. I, for one, my budget, whatever my target is going to be plenty tight, and I have no interest in pulling however many more millions out of judiciary and corrections and other areas in my budget. I think the fee is the more appropriate way to go, and it's historically been the way it's done.
Senator Reinert.
Thank you, Senator Carlson. And Senator Latz, if we were just talking about this. This isn't, I think, the way it's going to end up. But I think putting it on the general fund, A, makes it progressive instead of regressive. And when it goes to taxes, it puts pressure on us to come up with Plan C, which I think we have a framework for, but there's no way we could have had it ready for today.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Latz.
All I can vote on today is what I have before me, and I don't think it's good policy. I'm not going to hope somewhere down the road someone's going to come up with something better that I might like.
That's right.
This is where this decision should be made, I think, and if changes are made later in the process, well, then that's their decisions to make. But my decision to make today is on this amendment.
Any other questions? Senator Pappas, do you have a response for
Mr. Chairman, I'm really interested in keeping the bill moving so we can keep the conversation going. And I am sympathetic with Senator Reinert's argument that we need progressive taxation. And I already commented, I'm sympathetic with Senator Latz's comments about pressure on the general fund. So I'll leave it up to the committee. I don't know how I'm going to vote.
That's a good one. Well, Senator Reinert renews his motion for the A5 amendment. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, same
no.
sign.
No.
Motion passes.
Division.
Senator Latz calls division. All those in favor, raise your hand. Right hand. All those opposed, same sign.
Yeah, 9-4.
By a vote of 9 in favor and 4 against, the motion does prevail.
Mr. Chairman, then I would move that Senate File 935 as amended be recommended to pass and sent to the Committee on Taxes.
Any other questions? Senator Pappas renews her motion for a Senate File 935 as amended. Be recommended to pass and forward to taxes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, same sign. Motion passes.
There's one more thing to do, is all. Members, wait.
We have one more bill. And the Senate File 9.
541.
Sorry, 541.
Oh.
Senator? Senator Mattson.
Members, Chairman, I think that's the liquor bill I think we started out with earlier today. I think we had pretty much agreement that we had three, we had the Reinert, Dibble, and Pappas bills that I think were added, if I'm correct. Right. Yep. So I think the bill is kind of in the shape that at least I want to see it in, and I think we've heard from everybody that requested a hearing. So I would move that Senate file 541 as amended be recommended to pass, and I think it goes right to the Senate floor. This is, we've worked on this for two or three meetings, and I believe we're in, hopefully in full agreement.
Okay. Senator Metzen moves Senate file 541 be recommended as amended be recommended to pass and forward to the floor. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion passes. And we will be in recess until 6 p.m. in room, the same room. Thank you very much. Meeting adjourned.
Thank you.
Another committee coming in.